Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 44, the passing away of Bhishma. Sampadyamanam Agyaya Bhishman Brahmani Niskale Sarve Bhavubhus Te Tusnim Vayam Shiva Dinatyaye Sampadhyamanam Agyaya Vishman Brahmati Niskale Sarve Bhavubhuste Tusnim Vayam Vishiva Dinatyaye Sampadyanamam, having merged into Agena, after knowing this, Bhishman, about Sri Bhishma Dev, Brahmani, into the Supreme Absolute, Niskale, unlimited, Sarve, all present. Bhavubhute, all of them became Tushnim, silent. Yasmi Iva, like birds. Dina Atyaye,
at the end of the day.
Translation. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent like birds at the end of the day. Translation responsibly. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternal... Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity
of the Absolute,
all present there,
became silent,
like birds at the end of the day. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. To enter into or become merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute means to enter the original home of the living being. The living beings are all competent parts and parcels of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, and therefore they are eternally related with Him as servitor and the served. The Lord is the served by all His parts and parcels, as the complete machine is served by its parts and parcels. Any part of the machine removed from the whole is no longer important. Similarly, any part of the Absolute detached from the service of the Lord is useless. The living beings who are in the material world are all disintegrated parts of the parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole, and they are no longer as important as the original parts and parcels. There are, however, more intricate living beings who are eternally liberated. The material energy of the Lord, called Durga Shakti, or the superintendent of the prison house, takes charge of the disintegrated parts and parcels, and they undergo a conditioned life under the laws of material nature. When the living beings becomes conscious of this fact, he tries to go back home, back to Godhead. And thus, the spiritual urge of the living being begins. The spiritual urge is called Brahma Jignasya, or inquiry about Brahman. The principle that Brahma Jignasya is successful by knowledge, renunciation, and devotional service to the Lord. Jnana, or knowledge, means knowledge of everything from Brahman, the Supreme, renunciation, means detachment from material affection. And devotional service is the revival by the practice of the original position of the living beings. The successful living beings who are eligible to enter into the realm of the Absolute are called the Jnanis, the Yogis, and the Bhaktas. The Jnanis and the Yogis enter into the impersonal rays of the Supreme, but the Bhaktas enter into the spiritual planets known as the Vaikunthas. In these spiritual planets, the Supreme Lord as Narayan predominates, and the healthy, unconditioned living entities live there by rendering loving service to the Lord in the capacity of servant, friend, parents, and fiancé. There, the unconditioned living beings enjoy life in full freedom with the Lord, whereas the impersonalist Jnanis and Yogis enter into the impersonal glowing effulgence of the Vaikuntha planets. The Vaikuntha planets are self-illuminating like the sun, and the rays of the Vaikuntha planets are called the Brahmajyoti. The Brahmajyoti is spread unlimitedly, and the material world is but a covered portion of an insignificant part of the same Brahmajyoti. This covering is temporary, and therefore it is a sort of illusion. Bhishmadeva, pure devotee of the Lord, entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets where the Lord, in his eternal form of Parthasarathi, predominates over the unconditioned living beings who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. The love and affection which binds the Lord and the devotees are exhibited in the case of Bhishmadeva. Bhishmadeva never forgot the Lord in his transcendental feature as Parthasarathi, and the Lord was present personally before Bhishmadeva while he was passing to the transcendental world. This is the highest perfection of life. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshura Militam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimati Hridayananda Goswami Niti Namine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine Nebisesi Shunivadi Pashachate Chatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the prison house of material life. Bhishmadeva. Knowing that Bhishmadeva had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent like birds at the end of the day. So everybody was shocked when Bhishmadeva left. And from the purport we understand that the unlimited eternity of the Absolute means to enter in the original home of the living entity. So that's what Prabhupada always said, we're going back home, back to Godhead. We're actually don't belong here. This is not home. There the Prabhupada continues in the purport, there the unconditioned living beings enjoy life in full freedom with the Lord. Full freedom with the Lord. Prabhupada says that if you want to go back home, back to Godhead, then you'll have to completely become detached from anything to do with material life. Even if you've got a little attachment for material things, then you will not be allowed in the spiritual world. So how do we get back home? How do we detach ourselves completely from material things? God has given us a little freedom. This was really pertinent because yesterday I, in my chaplaincy work, I had to go to the Barwon prison to see my prison devotee, my Hare Krishna prison devotee. And the more times I go there, the more I meet all the other people that are in this block that he's in. It's called Hoya. And Hoya is maximum security. Heavy duty stuff. Very, very heavy duty. I'm always panicking when I go into that place. I always make sure there's plenty of guards over on that side. So these guys are big. You think I'm big, these guys are bigger than me, you know, and they're big brutes, you know. Anyway, I'm sort of becoming on friendly terms with a lot of them. So I was contemplating this, and then I was thinking, what's the verse for today? And it's all about prison house. Isn't Krishna amazing? He brings these things in. So Prabhupada says, if we want to go back home, back to God, then we'll have to be completely detached from material things. But he's given, the Lord is so merciful that he's given us some freedom, a little bit of freedom. Just like a child is given freedom, the parents give, a mother and father give the child a little bit of freedom, a little bit of leeway. But not complete freedom, because a child's freedom is nonsense. If you let a child completely go, what will they say? What will they want to do? They want to run around at all hours of the day. They won't take any rest. They want to eat jelly beans and ice cream all day, you know. And I don't want to have veggies. I don't want to have... Just give me more jelly beans, you know. Give me a big bowl of ice cream. So kids always are like that. They're given a little freedom, but not too much freedom. So a child must be protected from itself, because a child is ignorant. It doesn't know what to do, really. And so a child has to be protected from itself. Similarly, all living beings who come into this material world wanting to enjoy are exactly like children. We, when we came to this material world, we had our eyes wide open and we just want to enjoy. Anybody saw that film, the play that we used to do, Hansel and Gretel? Has anybody, you've seen it, haven't you? Yeah. Well, that was like, you know, at one stage we had to do this depiction, you know, the first part of, if, for those that haven't seen it, we did this play, and it was based on the nursery rhyme of Hansel and Gretel, and the fairy story of Hansel and Gretel. And so what we did was we had to depict how the living entity falls to the material world. And so I'm the guy, I'm the jiva, and I'm supposed to come down to the material world, and you know, I've got everything there, and my guru or my spiritual mentor is there as well, and he's saying, why do you want to go to this material world? But I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy for myself. And then he gives me all these packages and he sends me to the material world to enjoy. And the next shot is of me as a little baby with a big dummy in my mouth. Remember that? And really keen and anxious to enjoy. I'm really ready here to enjoy. So we're childlike. When we enter into this material world, we're actually children. And children don't know what's in their best interest. If you give a child a box of matches to play with, what are they going to do? They're going to burn themselves, you know. During the summer months, we hear so often that a child that's neglected or left behind near a pool drowns because they see a pool. Ooh, pool! And plop in the water and they drown, you know. So children have to be protected. I remember at the farm, when we were living at the farm at New Gaudadesh, when Chintamani was about 2 years old, and you know, New Gaudadesh, there were lots of snakes. And Chintamani would be lifting up rocks and she thought that they were worms, but they were little snakes, you know. It's like, so kids will play with anything, you know, okay, get away from the snake, you know. So we have to be really protective of children, because they're dangerous things and the child may not know what's good and what's not good. So similarly, we who are captured in this material world, the prison house, are bound by the modes of material nature. We're bound by the modes of material nature. There are three modes of nature, sattva, raja and tama. And it's been described that they're like the primary colours. You know how we have primary colours in art? We have primary colours, yellow, red and blue. So similarly, if you're doing a painting, you can do permutations of all those different colour combinations. So it is with us that we have a combination of all those three yugas, you know, tama. Sometimes we're a little bit more tamasic, sometimes we're a little bit more rajasic, and sometimes we're in the mode of goodness as well. But most of us here in this material world are in darkness, complete darkness, and we do not know anything. We do not know our real truth, the real knowledge. Exactly like children, we don't know what's for our best interest. What's our best interest? So unfortunately, that's the situation with the majority of people in this material world. They're in the darkest of ignorance. And we as devotees don't have to go out too far to actually see how ignorant people really are. And yesterday, as I was visiting the prison, it became really obvious to me, you know, that this is a place of darkness, especially a prison house. You know, we have the so-called freedom. We're driving down, you know, Geelong Road, and I've got a nice lecture on, and, you know, the sun was sort of shining yesterday. And I'm feeling free. And then you come into this place, this prison house, and it is so oppressive, so heavy. It is a heavy, heavy place. Vibrationally, you feel an incredible locking in. And even a visitor is scrutinized incredibly. Every part of you is searched. That before you even walk into the prison, there's this thing, this round circular thing that smells you. It smells if you've got any drugs on you. So I was keen to go and do my service in this prison yesterday, so I'm in the thing and it goes right, and I thought it was finished. So I just barge out of this thing, you know, and the cop comes up from the other end. He wouldn't let me through the door. Back, get back, get back. I'm thinking, get back on the green mat. So I had to go back out. I mean, they're so brutal, you know. That, I mean, I'm a priest. It's okay, you know. I'm not going to get back on the green mat. Go through it again and wait until the sign tells you to go. I say, okay, all right, no, yeah, sure. So I'm in the little thing and just smell it. Has he got any drugs on him, you know? No, you're okay. So then I'm finally allowed in. And then by this stage, I've got on this cop's wrong side, you know, because I didn't wait to have this machine sniff me. And so he said, okay, you have to take off every metal thing that you're wearing, right, before you go in, and everything. So my belt had to come off, my keys in the pocket, everything. He was really scrutinizing me. Finally, I get in. Then he said, okay, I want to empty out all your pockets. Show me the empty pockets. That pocket, this pocket, that pocket, this pocket, that pocket. Show me your socks. Pull down your socks. I'm thinking, my God, you know, he's taking all my freedom away. I had nothing to say. I was an innocent person. I'm not doing anything. And you're telling me to do all these things, you know. So then you finally get into the prison house. So thank God I'm in the prison house, you know. Anyway, then I'm in Hoya and I'm talking to some of the inmates there, and they've got no freedom at all. No freedom. They're completely at the mercy of these guards. These guards, you know, all of a sudden hear, and all of them have to stand out the front of their cells. And if you don't, you're really in trouble, you know. So they're all rushing and they all stand there. Okay, now you can keep on going. And then everything is, every step they take is monitored. That not one ounce of freedom do they have. You know, and especially in Hoya, when a person goes in for a serious crime, they have, like, say, for example, if they're doing 15 years, they've raped somebody or they've murdered somebody, 5 years of that is in maximum security, 5 years is in a little less secure, and then the final five are in less again. So in maximum security, I mean, you can't sneeze without them knowing what you're doing. You know? And the prisoners that I talk to, they have a certain amount of freedom. They get points. They can only bring in a certain amount of books. There's only a certain amount of television that they can watch. They can't get computers or anything like that. And if they have a computer, there's no access to the internet. So no Facebook. How could you possibly live without Facebook? And no Google, no nothing, you know. And it lights out at a particular time, get up at a certain time. They have to work for 4 hours a day. Not yes or no, sir, you have to work for 4 hours a day. And you don't argue with any of these cops, these wardens. I mean, they're big boys as well, you know. So anyway, I'm in there and I'm talking to one of the prisoners. And he was talking about how he's looking forward to getting out and again, enjoying life, you know. It was so ridiculous. He was saying, oh, you know, I'm really looking forward to getting out. When I get out, I'm going to get a Bedford truck and I'm going to travel all over Australia and see all the sights, and I'll visit every pub that I used to go to, and all that, going on and on and on. And I was like, yeah, that's nice. That's really interesting, you know. And I said to him, when do you think you'll get out? And he said, oh, it should be about 20 years' time now. So I'm thinking, my God, he's contemplating already his freedom, but his freedom is 20 years' time. So this is the material world that we live in. Generally, all the people in this material world do not know what the real purpose of their existence is. No one does, really, when you analyse it. What is the real purpose of your existence? Oh, to have a nice home and a family and to have a good job. Some have that. Others say, well, that my football club wins, or, you know. But we're all, in this material world, allured by our senses. Our senses are captivating us. We're all here just for self-motivation, selfish motivation, which leads to nothing else but disaster and the lack of freedom. One disaster, one mistake after another. And it's just an incredible situation, and we're just stuck in a prison house. With a child, there are so many things that captures their attention. I can eat this, I can look at this, but it could be poisonous. And so it is the same with humans in this material world. Prabhupada gives some really interesting examples when I was researching this. He gives the example of a fish. A fish is swimming in the ocean. There's heaps of food for a fish to eat. There's plankton on the bottom and there's things. And you see fish and they're always just floating around eating. But yet somebody throws in a rod with a little allurement. And the fish goes, I've got all this food here, but somehow or other I want to eat that little alluring thing. That's and crunch. And what happens? And the fish gets caught. Similarly, Prabhupada gives the example of the bee. The bee is searching for honey and nectar, buzzing around, you know, and he comes across a beautiful lotus. And the lotus smells so beautifully. Ah, and there's so much nectar, and he becomes intoxicated with the smell and the nectar, and then night time comes, and the lotus closes up, and the bee is suffocated inside the flower. So Prabhupada gives that analogy. The other analogy is that of the elephant, of how they capture elephants. Has anybody heard that one before? Prabhupada gives that analogy of how an elephant is caught. Prabhupada says, the big elephant, the powerful animal, loses its independence for sex life. Srila Prabhupada explains how an elephant is captured. Quote, a female elephant is induced to attract the male elephant and for sex. The male follows the female elephant, and the female elephant is trained up. He puts him in a ditch, so the female elephant lures the big elephant, and there's grass covered, and falls into a ditch. He falls down. He cannot move, you see. That means, in spite of his becoming such a giant animal, such a big animal, powerful animal, simply for sex life, he becomes captivated. So someone is becoming victim from sense attraction. It's just a question of, I want to enjoy. So that's us in this material world. We want to enjoy. And the final example that Prabhupada gives is that of a deer. The deer is actually captivated, and this is known by hunters. The deer is captivated by sweet sounds, by a sweet sound, a flute or something like that. So the hunter will go to the forest and play a flute or some magical, mystical sort of music, and the deer will prick up its ears and look around and become transfixed. And when it's transfixed, then the hunter can kill the animal. So one is captured by hearing, by the ear. One is captured by the smell. One is captured by the sight. And one is captured by the taste. And it all leads to disaster. Everything leads to disaster, that capture. Prabhupada also gives the analogy of the insects. And we've all seen that at night time if we go to the farm. You know, you see insects, and sometimes we have a bonfire or something outside, and we're all chanting, and the moths come, and they're allured by the shine of the fire, and just all frizzle up. So we all have these senses, each of us, smelling, hearing, tasting, taste, all these things. And every one of us, living entities, we've been victims of this material laws of nature. We're being captivated by one sense or another. Now what happens is an animal has one strong predominant sense. Like the bee has this sense of smell and wanting to get nectar, the deer had the ear, and so on and so forth. But a human being has got all the senses, and all the senses are very powerful. So we're in a double whammy. We've got so much to be attracted to. And a materialistic person is captivated by so many different material sense gratifications. It's unbelievable, the amount of sense gratification. And it just gets more and more and more. Even from my youth to now, there are so many more sense gratificatory things that have developed that weren't there in my childhood. And the same for my parents. And so it goes on. There's more and more and more. I mean, who would have thought when I was 10 years old or 12 years old that people would be captivated by a computer? By a computer. How many of us actually get captivated by a computer? By either Facebook or Googling or some game on that, and you're like, wow, it's just getting me in, you know? And sometimes it's really hard to, I'll just see what that person is saying on Facebook. Maybe I should just check that link out. And it's like all these senses are just, your little eyes are going, wow, you know, it's all so exciting. So there are so many things. This never stops. So a materialistic person is captivated by so many sense objects for gratification. And that is just the prison house. That's our prison house. With prisoners I visited, the state law keeps them in prison, in jail. Like I said, when you go into the prison system, there are so many locks, so many bars. When to get to the Hoya place where I counsel and have chaplaincy with the prisoners there, I have to go through at least seven doorways, seven gates. And that's another thing about these prison houses. Everything is loud. You know, it's not like a soft closing door. First you have to come up to the door and there's a guard and he sees you and then click, there's this buzzer noise and then the gate opens up and it's self-closing. So they're huge steel doors. And then as soon as you go through, it closes by itself. Clunk! You know, so you've got seven of these big doors, you know. So everything is a front to your senses. Everything is like a shock. It's amazing. So these locks and gates and doors and everything keep people in the material prison house, the criminals in the prison house, but the laws of nature are such that they don't require physical jails or anything like that. Our senses keep us intact in this jail of material world. Our senses are the shackles. Our senses are the bars. Our senses are the handcuffs that keep us in this material world. We don't need to be required to have handcuffs or bars on the window, heavy security doors. The senses are so strong that they will keep us in this material world, incapable of escape. We cannot move out. If you're here, it is so difficult to get out. You know, we are a prisoner in this material world. And the majority of people are prisoners in this material world, and they don't even know. They have no idea of it. They just go along, just like this man in his illusion, thinking, oh, one day I'm going to be free. One day I'm going to be happy. I'm going to get my Bedford truck and travel to all the pubs around Australia 20 years from now. It's just amazing. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Devyesha gunamayi mammamai duratidya. You know, gunamani, guna means qualities. Everyone is bound up by different qualities, gunas, sattva-guna, raja-guna, tamaguna. And gunamani also means ropes. Also ropes. And in this way, one is bound by ropes of material sense enjoyment. Just like if your hands are tied. Similarly, gunamani is the mother nature. Is the mother. She's tied us up and she's bound us by the laws. Stringent laws of material nature. There's no escaping. And Prabhupada was saying this, you know, we cannot get out. And when you read about these amazing souls like Bhishma Dev, who's been freed. You know, this person is actually going back to Krishna. No wonder there was just like stunned silence. Wow! He's escaped from the prison house. It's such an amazing thing. By the way, in those prison houses, they still try to escape. People still try to escape. And I've heard a couple of attempts on how they try to get out. One guy hid in a dump master for about 2 or 3 days and waited for the rubbish man to come. Somehow or other, he managed to climb over one wall and hide in a dump master. And then he was there for 2 days or something, living in the rubbish bin. And then finally, the rubbish man came, and as they were tipping him out, you know, he was so weak from being in there. All right, bring him back in. So all that endeavour to try and get out of the material world. So he can't get out. So, Devyesha gunamayi mammamai duratidya. You cannot get out. It is not possible. In this material world, it's not possible. But there is one way. And that is mameva paprajante mayam etam taranti te.
Surrender.
Yes. If only we have Krishna conscious surrender. If that's the only way you can get out, just to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And the example is given in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. How Bhishma Dev was able to escape the clutches of material life. He was constantly thinking of who?
Krishna.
In the form of? Parthasarathi. He could visualize. He had this, He had this vision all his life that he wanted to see Krishna as the chariot driver of Arjuna. He wanted to see Krishna as that vibrant warrior. You know, as a kshatriya. He wanted to see this form of Krishna. Some people are like that. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Krishna as a really strong, powerful, violent. But maybe that's a little bit of chat. I'd like to see Krishna also as a nice soft. But you know, there are all these different aspects of Krishna. He would be the most powerful. He'd be the strongest. So Bhishma had this thought, I only want to see that. And he dedicated his whole life to that. And what happened at the end? He actually had Krishna right there as Parthasarathi. I'm here, you know. Krishna was still all glistened up from the fighting and everything, and Bhishma Dev loved it. He couldn't get enough of it. And then he passed and left his body like that. So this is the example. And the quote from the Bhagavatam is, Bhishma Dev, as a pure devotee of the Lord, pure devotee, completely surrendered, entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets, where the Lord in his eternal form of Parthasarathi predominates over the unconditioned living beings who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. So like Bhishma Dev, we have to break the bondage, this guna mamayi, maya, that's wrapped us in these modes of material nature. If one is engaged in devotional service, he's not under this bondage. So the more we engage in devotional service, we'll feel the bonds, the shackles being released. We'll be freed up. To the extent where we want to be like Bhishma Dev and only see Krishna in our vision, day and night, and then at the time of death, Krishna comes to us. So, on another point, which was another really interesting thing this week that I had, it's so exciting, you know, when you're preaching, isn't it? As a devotee, we have so much adventure if we allow ourselves the opportunity. I had an opportunity to do a eulogy. A Muslim organization in Darabin organized a eulogy for the victims of the boat refugees. You know, everybody is aware that there's big catastrophes in Australia at the moment, that there's these people that are seeking asylum and they're coming across in little boats from Indonesia, and at the moment the seas are very rough and a lot of people are dying coming over to Australia. Nobody's heard of this?
Yeah.
Big controversy in Australia at the moment. So this was a function to remember those poor, forlorn people that were drowned. I'm talking about men, women, children, where they go on this rickety boat out of desperation for freedom. They get this rickety boat and they'll take any risk, and they travel over the seas where there's waves of 5 metres, 15 metres, and this little rickety boat goes, you know. And anyway, as it happens so many times, it collapses or it sinks, and consequently hundreds of people die. They're trying to seek asylum here in Australia. And it was interesting to make a comparison with this scenario. It's only when I was asked to do a eulogy and offer our respects and all that kind of thing for the fallen souls, which is a sad thing. There are so many sad things in this material world, you know. It's not a pleasant place. So it's interesting because you can make the comparison. When people arrive on our shores in Australia illegally and claim that you have to accept me as an Australian citizen, we become really disturbed by that. The Australian public become really disturbed with that and say, no, get out, you have to go. But if a person arrives with proper permits, have got their permanent residency, then everything is okay. You're a free person to move around the country. So the same thing it is with the living entity when they come to this material world and say, I own all this. This is all mine. Just like the refugee that comes to Australia and says, actually, you've got to look after me. You know, I'm Australian. No, you're not. Get out. So similarly with us, when we come to this material world, we straight away have this consciousness that everything is here for my enjoyment. It's for me. Mine. And so, consequently, we are in a real ignorance, because in actual fact, nothing belongs to you. Everything belongs to Krishna. Everything. 100%. And this is the ignorance, this is that childish ignorance of the conditioned souls. And this happens time and time again. Krishna consciousness movement means to move this ignorance. Prabhupada came to the Western world to shift this understanding, to shift this ignorance that's there in this material world. So mercifully he came to give us that realization that actually everything is God's property and everything belongs to God. To think contrary is aham mamati from the Bhagavatam. I am this body and everything in relation to this is mine. This is called moha or illusion. So we are constantly trapped in this illusion. Even the body doesn't belong to us. Even that is part of Krishna. So as devotees, our position is perfect because we're not following false leaders. False leaders. We look at the world's leaders today in society and we're absolutely appalled by their quality of leadership. We follow real leadership. Leaders that can actually tell us the truth about this material world, about this prison house. The greatest leader is sitting right there, Srila Prabhupada. He is a real leader because he's guiding and directing the people to real reality, to truth. And his disciples are now guiding and directing us to the real truth in life. Part of the thing at this eulogy was the dismay that people felt at the inadequacies of the leadership within this world at the moment. People can't make decisions. These leaders, so-called leaders, have no idea on how to lead people because they're ignorant children as well. You know, like say for example, we had the situation where recently, I'm not sure if you heard about this, but in Indonesia, we live export cows to Indonesia and they slaughter them over in Indonesia. And they do it in such an inhumane way that some reporters from Australia went over there and filmed it. And on a TV show, Four Corners, they showed the atrocities of how these animals are slaughtered. And it caused an outrage within the public. All the members of parliament within each little municipality and each little electorate were bombarded by people who saw this on the news and on this program and said, how can this happen? What are you leaders doing? How can you let these animals suffer like this? You know, and there was a huge protest. And within 2 or 3 days, the government had changed the policy. Mm-hmm. Had stopped all live exports to Indonesia because they feared the people. The people were uprising. By the way, and aside from that, after that whole incident happened, the amount of people that became vegetarian after that was enormous. There was an enormous rise of vegetarianism within the Australian society because of that particular atrocity that was shown on TV. And they were thinking, well, hang on, Dick, if this is happening in Indonesia, this could also be happening in slaughterhouses here. Maybe we shouldn't eat meat. So a lot of people did it. But the point that I was trying to make was that the leaders were pushed to do something. And similarly, when I gave this eulogy at the Muslim conference that we had, they were just so completely disgusted in the leadership, because here we have leaders that should be making a decision. There are hundreds of people dying coming in their boats over here, and both parties are going, well, I think we should do it this way. And the other one is saying, I should do it this way. And the other one is saying, I should. And no compromise. And so many people are dying. No compromise. No, let's get together and work this out. So there's no leadership. So it's the blind leading the blind. So this is the point. We have in Krishna consciousness true leadership to take us where we want to go. You know, like when a person comes to Krishna consciousness, the first thing they're looking for is direction, guidance. And you as senior devotees are able to give that guidance on behalf of your spiritual master. You direct people. No, you don't do it like this. And you do things like this. And the law of karma exists like this. And we're vegetarians because of this. And the new bhakta or the new person that's coming is going, oh, really? And you're giving them information. You are dispelling their ignorance. So each one of us is guru, each one of us is a teacher. And just like a child, we are educating people. When people come to this material world, they're ignorant, they're children, and we educate them. So Krishna is the perfect leader. Krishna is perfect in every single way. We are imperfect. I'm imperfect. The fact is we're all imperfect. But Prabhupada gives us a really beautiful analogy. He says that Krishna is perfect and child is imperfect. And so just as long as the child is following the father, who is perfect, catching his hand, he is perfect as well. Because there is no danger as long as he's with his father. As long as we hold on to Krishna. As long as we hold on to Guru. As long as we have that, then we're safe. Then we're safe. This is the point. So, anyone who is not Krishna conscious is following blindly. This is blindness. Some rascal misguiding leadership in society. We don't take heed for that. We follow the rules of the land and we'll follow the general laws of the land, but we are not dominated by these people that are our guides and directors from politicians. We take our leaderships from the spiritual direction, from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Because we attempt to take Krishna's shelter, it's like the example that Bhishma Dev is doing. Sarvadharma Parityagya, Mamekam Saranam Vraja. He just completely surrendered to Krishna. And when he completely surrendered to Krishna, Krishna was before him, everything went silent. It's such a magic moment. So he will give us guidance. Krishna will give us guidance. Krishna will look after us. He will guide us through the spiritual master. He's within you. He's within everyone. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayanam Jyotistati. He's there. He's not far away. Although he's in Goloka Vrindavan, he's also here. He's right here. He's here, right here, and on the deity, in the deity here. He's within our heart. Krishna's everywhere. So we have to take advantage of this. And how is he present? And how do we do that? How do we break the shackles of this material world? How do we break our sense attachment to sense gratification? Krishna advises us to serve him 24/7. To serve him diligently 24/7. We have to maintain activity all the time. Like say for example Bhishma. Bhishma was a warrior. He was known as the greatest warrior on the planet at the time. Do you think he naturally got those abilities? Okay, he may have had some aptitude for that, but he practiced his warrior craft. He was actively engaged in making sure that he maintained himself. He was an old man, and yet he was still a great warrior. The best. So that means it's not just something that happens automatically. He actually trains himself every day. So Prabhupada was always emphatic that we fill our day with service. You know, some people think, and there were other devotees in the 70s and stuff, where they thought, oh, I'd like to be a Babaji, just like Gaur Kishore does Babaji, and go off and just chant Hare Krishna all day, you know, and just do kirtan and like that. Prabhupada said, you cannot do. But if you want to try, you can try. 6 months later, they came back. Every single one of them. Prabhupada said, our ignorance is so deep that the only good medicine for us is to work hard. He said, we have ass mentality. So just work hard. Work hard for Krishna. And that's really our position. You know, he never placed that much emphasis on, oh, I have to do good bhajan. You know, I have to chant 64 rounds or I have to chant so many rounds. Chant your 16 rounds, read Prabhupada's book for an hour or so, and do service. Do service. Become absorbed 24/7 in service. Don't allow your mind to be idle at any time. If you allow yourself to be idle at any time, what happens is the shackles of material nature will take a hold of you again, under the guise of so many different things. But I have to research this thing on Google. I have to research this thing on Facebook. I have to see what that devotee said for me. I mean, I can't wait on that. And time to... Anybody notice? I mean, I'm talking for myself as well. I'm preaching to myself. Has anybody noticed how the time flies when you're on Facebook or on the computer? Has anybody experienced that? Is it only me? No. All of a sudden you go, oh, follow this lead and follow that lead. My God, it's 2:00. Where's the day gone? This Prabhupada would actually be so upset if we wasted our time. We have to work so diligently. One of the things is, when we were young devotees, and I guess in a sense that's still happening today, but we had, you know, paraphernalia sales. Has anybody here did paraphernalia sales? We used to sell things. Did you do paraphernalia?
Yeah.
Yeah, sales. We used to either sell prasadam, or we'd sell paintings or candles or whatever. And we had people working in a candle factory, and it was like a 12-hour day there, and we'd have marathon after marathon. You'd have to make more candles. We used to have these vats of wax, and we had these candles that we used to sell. And they were called Hawaiian candles. This is how this temple was built, on the funds from these different paraphernalia sales. And I was heading up a team of guys and we would work from as soon as we had breakfast until evening prasadam, we would be dipping candles. And then there would be a marathon, and Aniruddha would come in and say, "I need more candles, we've got to go out somewhere or other." And we'd push these people to the max. We worked hard. And at night time, you were just so completely tired, like, boom, you know, you crash out. No time for sense gratification, no time for even thinking what it would be like to do something, you know, and the next day, back in, you know. So this was, and so many other times, we had quotas. Everyone was on a quota system, and the temple president would have you down, okay. Varadatri, you have got to get this week so much Lakshmi coming in, you have to sell so many candles or t-shirts or whatever. And, how am I going to do that? No. But you'd do it. You'd make the endeavour, you know. Sometimes it'd be so much if it was a marathon and you didn't make your quota and it's 12 o'clock at night and you'd come home to the temple president and you'd say, "Well, this is all I've done, you know." The temple president said, "But you, Varadatri, you haven't made your quota." "Yeah, but it's 12 o'clock. Where will I go now?" There's hospitals that are open, there's theatres that are open. And so sure enough, out you'd go and collect the final bits. And we used to, in the middle of the night, we would be, at one stage we were selling paintings. And again, we had to, because this is the way we made our income. And the devotees were enthusiastic, like, worked hard. And you'd go out. Now, I mean, at 12 o'clock at night, what's available? There's not much around. So you drive around the suburbs, and if you saw a light on in a house, got it. 12 o'clock at night, you know. And the woman come out in a nightie or something, and "Yes? I'm just in the area selling paintings." And I was So these were the things we had to do. We were engaged. And believe it or not, it was ecstatic, because it freed us from these shackles of sense gratification. So in this day, that's not called for anymore so much, that we're engaged in such deep, heavy work. But still, we have to apply that in our lives on a daily basis. We have to check ourselves that there isn't a time that we are slacking off. We have to really keep it. If we want to get out of this prison house, then we have to, Prabhupada said, do your 16 rounds, you know, read a little bit of my books, and then get out and work hard in whatever capacity, you know. It's not that we're crying that we've got so much service. We're crying because we haven't got enough service. We should be going to our superiors and saying, "What more can I do? What do you want me to do?" Not that we complain, "Oh God, I've got to do the vases once a week. Oh, it's my time." I'm not picking on you. She's my spiritual daughter, so I can pick on her. But, you know, that's just an example. But, you know, we've got to make an endeavour. And all the grihasthas also that are coming to the temple and taking so much opportunity, so much strength from this place, so much knowledge from this place, so much liberation from this place. Where were you before you came to this temple? You were bound up by the shackles of sense gratification. You were bound up in your little family life, you know, looking after the children here, working hard like an ass, and the money comes in, and got to send them to school, and then we'll go to the movies, and we'll go to the Gold Coast, and all of a sudden 10 years are out of your life. And what have you achieved? Nothing. But now, somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna, you've got the association of devotees. You start to feel Krishna in your life every day. You know, I often get asked as a chaplain, as a minister, do you actually see God? I said, I don't see God, I feel God. I feel God's love. And the more and more I become a devotee, deeper and deeper I surrender, the longer I stay within this movement, the more I feel God's presence. I literally feel God's presence. And that is so liberating. And it becomes such a reality that you want nothing else but more of that connection. That's there for us. And so the Grihasthas who have been given this opportunity in their lives to raise their children in this true knowledge, to be a true leader, to give that freedom to our children, that you don't have to be bound up in this material world. I've got the ticket. Daddy and Mummy have got the ticket for you to get out of this material world. And it's the best education, Krishna conscious education. This is so fundamental. We have to give back to that. It's not that it's all take. We have to see ourselves, how can I work harder for this institution? How can I push on this more and more, this institution? What is required in this movement now? And we have to take it personally. Not that we say, oh, he's doing so much good work, or she's doing so much good work, and aren't they wonderful, and blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? And sometimes we have to really be introspective. Really bring it back to ourselves and honestly look and ask your God brothers and sisters, do you think I'm doing enough? Do you think I'm doing enough? Could I do something more? And if someone comes up to you like that, if you go to your superior and ask, am I really doing enough? Could I do some more? Be honest to see, okay, yeah, well, yeah, maybe there is. And the superior, the senior devotee should say, listen, well, let me have a look at your timetable. Yeah, there's a day here that you really don't do much. Yeah, but Prabhu, I do my reading on that day. Well, can you do reading and do something else as well? They need such and such a help down at Crossways or down at Gopal's, or they need some book distribution. The book distribution is down. Can you do that? So we have to look in every way, how can we develop our service attitude? More and more and more and more every day, and work hard every day. When that happens, then everything is there. This is the Krishna movement. This is the Krishna consciousness movement. It is not a lazy man's society. It is not a lazy person's retreat center. This is a movement. We see how our founder Acharya worked hard, day in, day out, to push on this movement. We see how our Guru Maharajas, our spiritual masters and the sannyasis and the senior people within the temples work hard, day in, day out, year after year after year after year. Your Guru Maharaj, you know, is travelling all over America preaching, you know, Devamrita Swami. Day in, day out. You know, I spent time with him when we had our AGM meetings, you know. I'm just so in awe of how Krishna conscious this man is. And Aniruddha and myself had a room just behind him. So the walls are like paper. You hear everything that's going on. Somebody sneezes or does something else, you hear it. And he was just constantly chanting Hare Krishna, getting up early, reading Prabhupada's books every single day, you know. This is hard work, you know. We have to see ourselves as hard work. That's our austerity, just work hard for Krishna. And when we do, then Krishna will help us. He will guide us. He will direct us. He's our Father. We take His hand. We're with Him. And with His love and guidance, we'll go back home, back to Godhead, just like Bhishma Dev did. If we want to remain ignorant children, then we'll remain here in the prison house and perhaps dream of eventually coming back to the spiritual world. But let's make it a reality that at the end of this lifetime, we actually go back home. That there's that silent moment when we're there around Varadatri, or maybe me or whatever, whoever it is, and I've seen so many of my God brothers, there's that silent moment when the smile comes on that devotee's face and you know that Krishna's there with them and they're going home. They're free. They are truly free. This is what we're after. This is what we want to attain. And that we have to be very, very serious about this. So I'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Can I have any comments or questions at all for us? Yes, Prabhu. I can always rely on you, Prabhu. Thank you.
Thank you very much for an excellent class.
It's a pleasure.
About how we have Krishna.
from before I was seven. I was 7 days a week. A few weeks back, I was in Germany, and you were talking about that prison barriers. Even the airport barriers, security check is so difficult.
Oh, yeah.
They have got everything, your passport, your visa, your boarding ticket, everything. And then he just jumps out of us. He comes and sees, where is Agra? Because my passport is in Australian citizen, but born in Agra. So he came to ask me, where is Agra? And I went in India. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing.
So it's amazing how strict they are.
Ah, absolutely. Absolutely, every one of us. You'd be surprised.
Second point I want to tell you, when I was 5 years old, my mother used to say that if you don't become a devotee, you have to go in another womb, which is either man or animal. And she used to quote this word, Punrapi Janani Deferishanam Praya Malayu Prahana. So unless you become a devotee, you can't get out of this prison.
Nope.
So.
Yeah, that's true.
Is there 2 points I want to?
Thank you, Prabhu. Any other comments or questions? Did you have a question for me?
The next point, when you're talking about how we should give up this consciousness and preach, and just the other day she went to the MCD or Dimsum for the university club. And I was just amazed, so much lavish arrangement for self gratification. And it's so clean, everything is proper. And I was just thinking, all that is coming from taxpayer money. Like they maintain, they make all these, you know, the MCGs, all these things. Actually, everyone in Australia is getting taxed to coordinate people's sense gratification.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, devotees are working hard, and part of their tax money goes to that. So there's some kind of reaction. And I was listening to one lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and one by my spiritual mother was explaining that unless we actually, as grihasthas, use our efforts and a little bit of the luxury that we get to actually push on Krishna consciousness, then we'll suffer some contamination.
Absolutely.
The nature of this material world is that in any work that you do, there will be contamination.
Absolutely.
So unless we engage in devotional service, some preaching or directly serving the deity, we will get some kind of reaction.
Yeah. It's tainted. That's absolutely correct. It was really interesting. I was speaking to Aniru the other day because they just came back from the States. And they went to the epitome of sense gratification. It's a city which is known for the epitome of sense gratification. Where do you think that is? Huh? Las Vegas! So they went there. And they have a preaching centre there, you know. And it's doing really great. And one devotee, Aniruddha told me that one devotee said, was it a Chincharupa or Aniruddha? One of them said that somebody had said that a lot of these casinos make it so easy for you to stay in an apartment, a lush apartment. They pay, you know, you only pay $50 for a night in the most plush hotel, right? Because they want you to come and gamble. So they want to entice you. To the extent also where they give you a free shot at the like poker machines or whatever it is, they give you a free one, you know? So if you go to, they had this whole week or something, and somebody gets an opportunity, you can go to this casino and you get a free shot at one of these gambling things. So they told the devotees there that set up that new preaching centre, you know, they've got this thing that, you know, if you go there, you can have a free shot at one of these gambling things. So they said, well, why don't you go and check it out? You know, I mean, you're not gambling. You know, you're not spending Krishna's Lakshmi, and they wanted to get. So, oh, yeah, okay. So the lady went there, and she. $10,000. Thank you! And they paid all the bills for the new temple that they set up. I thought that was so good. That was brilliant. Krishna wins again, you know, so yeah. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much, Prabhu. Oh, yes, Prabhu, yeah.
Prabhu, even if such a great devotee and he's merging into the Supreme or leaving his body, what is the core lesson we learn from his passing away?
Always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. That was the whole nature of the class that I was just giving. You missed out on that part of it. Always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna, and work hard for Krishna. Work incredibly hard for Krishna. Really, until you're absolutely pooped at the end of the day. You think, and that satisfaction, there's no greater satisfaction. When you lay your head on the pillow at night time and think, I've really done something today for Prabhupada, for this movement. That's when you feel satisfied. That's how you make advancement. Bhishma Dev, when he laid down on the bed of arrows there, he was satisfied he'd done his job. And he saw Krishna right there. Then he passed away. That's the goal. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.